Welcome everyone, this is Corinne. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. Let's begin as we usually do and come together for a few mindful, quiet moments. Wherever our attention has been, whatever we've been thinking about, anticipating, let's just see if we can release all of that to spirit, instead turning our attention to our own sense of willingness. We're all here because we're willing. We're willing to see differently. And connecting with that sense of willingness and turning to our inner teacher and offering that willingness. May we read what we need to read tonight. May we hear what we need to hear, knowing that any seeming gain that any one of us experiences, any miracle that any one of us experiences is for all. We're walking the path of awakening together. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And turning our attention to this time and place, and slowly allowing the eyes to open. Alrighty. So we're starting a new section tonight. If you have the Sparkle Edition, we are reading on page 389. The section is called Specialness and Guilt. If you have the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it is Chapter 16, Part 6, Specialness and Guilt is what it's called. And if you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's Chapter 16, Part 5. The subheading is called The Choice for Completion. And from what I could see at a glance, it looks like some of the paragraph breaks will be different, but that's usually the case of how it is between editions. So keep an eye out for that. So does anybody need me to repeat any page references?
Not really, if you could just tell me the chapter.
Hi, Carla.
Hey.
The original edition is Chapter 16, Part 6. It's called Specialness and Guilt.
Thank you.
Thank you. You are welcome. All righty. Let's start reading. So, specialness and guilt. In looking at the special relationship, it is necessary first to realize that it involves a great amount of pain. Anxiety, despair, guilt, and attack all enter into it, broken into by periods in which they seem to be gone. All these must be understood for what they are. Whatever form they take, they are always an attack on the self to make the other guilty. We have spoken of this before, but there are some aspects of what is really being attempted that we have not touched upon. I'm just going to keep reading the next paragraph. Very simply, the attempt to make guilty is always directed against God. For the ego would have you see him and him alone as guilty, leaving the sonship open to attack and unprotected from it. The special love relationship is the ego's chief weapon for keeping you from heaven. It does not appear to be a weapon, but if you consider how you value it and why, you will realize what it must be. The special love relationship is the ego's most boasted gift and one which has the most appeal to those unwilling to relinquish guilt. The dynamics of the ego are clearest here, for counting on the attraction of this offering, the fantasies which center around it are often quite open. Here, they are usually judged to be acceptable and even natural. No one considers it bizarre to love and hate together, and even those who believe that hate is sin merely feel guilty and do not correct it. So that's where I'll pause. Okay, so special relationships. So again, so going back to the first paragraph that we just read, looking at the special relationship, it's necessary first to realize that it involves a great amount of pain, anxiety, despair, guilt, and attack. So special relationships, again, the purpose of special relationships is to keep the separation going. So how could anxiety, despair, guilt, and attack not enter into them if the purpose is to keep the separation going and the way of separating from God is to, you know, dream of what God does not know. God does not know anxiety, despair, guilt, and attack. They have to be illusions, but because God doesn't know them, they're a means for keeping us sort of mesmerized by illusion, by what is false. So I thought it was really powerful then in the next paragraph where it says, very simply, the attempt to make guilty is always directed at God. For the ego would have you see him and him only, or him alone, as guilty, leaving the sonship open to attack and unprotected from it. Then it goes on to say the special love relationship is the ego's chief weapon for keeping you from heaven. So very simply, the attempt to make guilty is always directed against God. It's always directed against our capital S self, because keeping our true self out of our awareness is how the belief in the ego keeps going. And so to project guilt onto God, to project that, you know, the sonship can be open to attack, that attack can possibly happen, are just false beliefs, again, to keep this dream of separation going. And so when we had that tiny mad idea of wanting to be separate and special, and God didn't know specialness and couldn't give specialness, we kind of said, and this, again, is in the formless level, we were kind of like, you're not going to give us specialness? Well, let's make some things instead, you know, using this power of God that we are, let's make some things to work this out so we can experience specialness. So the special love relationship, what it's saying is that this is the ego's, you know, chief weapon for keeping us from heaven, these special relationships that we have, and they're only special to the extent that we allow them to be used on behalf of us staying asleep. So as soon as we turn, as soon as we give these relationships, turn to the Holy Spirit, they're now being used on behalf of our awakening. So I'm going to just pause there and see if anybody has anything that's come up for you so far. Questions, comments, insights, examples, whatever it may be. I can add, later in the second paragraph that we just read, the fantasies which center around special love relationships are often quite open. Here they're usually judged to be acceptable and even natural. No one considers it bizarre to love and hate together. What comes up for me, just an example, in my interpretation of what this is saying, is that the fantasies of the ego are kind of like the happily ever after fairy tale story of, you know, if we just meet that one right person, that one soulmate that was, you know, absolutely meant for us, then everything will be okay. And we don't question that, right? That's a theme in probably most Disney movies, you know, it's like permeated throughout our culture. So when it says these fantasies are usually judged to be acceptable and even natural, even the fantasy of like, and again, I'm sticking with special love relationships at the moment. This is in a romantic sense. This can be special love relationships with children, with friends, whatever it may be. But I was just thinking an example of like the fantasy too. It's like that fantasy wedding, you know, that fantasy wedding day of it's going to be this, you know, this perfect day. Again, another example of a fantasy judged to be acceptable and even natural according to the world's terms. And when it goes on to say, no one considers it bizarre to love and hate together, I know that I have been in conversations with folks before, and this is a long time ago. I remember speaking with somebody who was saying that, you know, their romantic partner fills their needs in a certain way, but it's their friendships through their girlfriends that fill needs in another way, because, like, you know, their partner, there's whatever doesn't jive together. That to me is an example of loving and hating together, in a sense that there were, looking for needs to be met outside of God, looking for needs to be met outside of the self in others, instead of who it is, what it is that we're really looking for, which is God.
Yeah, the second paragraph, it just seems like the ego is up to its thing again of confusing, right? You're confusing us. And then in the first paragraph, for me now, it's me, just little old me, that, you know, the anxiety, the despair, the guilt, all those, to me, they feel like weaknesses. Like you get confused, and then you slide. And it's just me now. You slide backwards, and all of a sudden you feel guilty, or you despair, or you give up. You know what I mean? Like you get all confused, and then you feel weak. You just go weak. You're limp. You don't have it. You know, you don't have that positive motivation and all the willingness that we always talk about. It just fades, and you're like, you know, the guy on the beach that gets the sand kicked in his face, you know? It's like...
Yeah, you know, that what you just described, how I've used that example before of, like, you know, sitting on the railing of a staircase and we listen to the ego for one little thing and then, vroom, like, we slide right down the handlebar and we're in the thick of it and don't even realize that, you know, we've slid all the way down into an ego trap. And so... But again, where you said, you know, it feels like, you didn't use the word stuck, but like when you're in that thick of it, that's the beauty of this work, is that it can switch in an instant, that it is that just remembering to say, help, to say, you know, hey, like I have this little bit of willingness, help me, show me. When Paula and Carol and I used to attend the in-person study group together that my stepdad and my mom facilitated for many years, there was a gentleman there who he used to say, show me. Like he'd be working the course and I remember him just saying over and over again, show me, show me. And he'd also, I meant to share this, I think, last week, or maybe it was the week before, but sometimes getting frustrated with the course too. And I remember he'd say that, like, he'd take his book and hurl it across the room and be like, it's all lies. and of course, only to pick it back up again, you know, to keep working it, because it is that path out of hell. So even though it might feel like we get stuck down that, you know, it's sliding down that spiral staircase, that staircase banister, it's only that tiny bit of willingness, that small change of mind, that asking for help that can make the difference in helping us find the way out.
You know, and sometimes that contrast that comes about, I experienced it this weekend.
Right.
You know, and it can feel so, it can just feel so awful.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a trap that you can't get out of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beneficial in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
If you allow it and
process
through it with the Holy Spirit, it is so beneficial.
Paula, I'm so,
so
glad
you're never going to get it done, and it's never going to be wrong, you know, and trusting the process. But again, trusting the process with the Holy Spirit is, because we can't undo it. We can't. We don't have the power, you know.
Right.
The Holy Spirit is the one who shifts us out of this craziness.
Which is our right mind, which is the real you. So again, that Holy Spirit isn't anything separate from us. It's the sane you. It's the real you that has not forgotten who we all are. And Paula, I'm so glad that you just shared that, because that just sparked my memory, because I wanted to also add something in response to what you shared, Brian. It's really funny. I've just been inspired to start sharing more, and so I started making some video blogs. And what I shared in the one that's going to be posted tomorrow was that I can't say that I have bad days anymore. That doesn't mean that shit doesn't come up. It does. But rather than think, oh, I'm having such a bad day, the crap is coming up because it's an opportunity to look at it with spirit. So it's, how can anything be bad if the shit hitting the fan is just an opportunity to say, help? It's just an opportunity to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to see this differently. That's the only reason it ever comes up. So if it seems like we keep getting hooked by the ego, like if it seems like we keep backsliding and doing the same thing or the same pattern, I never think that we lack progress. I never think that there's any kind of, like, you know, regressing. I think always, because every time we make that choice to return back to spirit, that's laying another rock solid, you know, brick in our foundation. Yeah. We might forget it and choose, you know, to listen to the ego again and forget about all this, but then we come back and we lay another brick, and then we forget again, and then we come back and lay another brick. Those bricks there that were prior, each time we chose again, they're still there. So we never are, you know, backtracking. We're never losing any progress that we've made. We're only ever moving forward. And so when we get stuck, it's a great thing when shit comes up, because then we can look at it with the Holy Spirit. So that's what I mean when I say I don't have bad days anymore. It doesn't mean that I don't have challenges that come up throughout the day, but it means I don't label it anymore as a bad day. It's just coming up because it's a chance for me to look at it with my sane mind.
There's something so beneficial, too, about not being afraid of our emotions and feelings and, you know, that these special, especially the special relationships bring up. We're taught a lot of craziness. We're taught...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yes, we are.
So much upside down thinking.
Yeah. So,
especially,
Brian, did that help
in the special relationship?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. Let's read the next paragraph. Across the bridge is your completion. I think that's where I am. Wait, no. No, that's not where I am. I'm looking at the wrong page. Okay. This is the natural condition of separation. That's where we are, right?
That's it.
Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to reread the last sentence of the prior paragraph and then dive into this next paragraph. No one considers it bizarre to love and hate together, and even those who believe that hate is sin merely feel guilty and do not correct it. This is the natural condition of the separation. And those who learn that it is not natural at all seem to be the unnatural ones. For this world is the opposite of heaven, being made to be its opposite, and everything here takes a direction exactly opposite of what is true. In heaven, where the meaning of love is known, love is the same as union. Here, where the illusion of love is accepted in love's place, love is perceived as separation and exclusion. I'll pause there for a moment. So one of the reasons that I remember A Course in Miracles when I first got into this, one of the reasons that it really made a lot of sense to me, and I don't mean to sound, I don't know how this is going to sound, grim. I don't mean it to sound that way, but the Course is pretty clear that there's only love. Heaven is our true state. And it says pretty clearly here that the world is the opposite of heaven. I've always thought that, like, this is hell, that there is no hell, that welcome, this is it, you know, right now. And it's our task to learn to love our way out of it. And that's kind of what this is saying to me, is that, that we've made an opposite to something, to heaven, which cannot have an opposite, so it must be an illusion. So it's not a real hell, it's just a dream of hell, of death, of, you know, sickness, suffering. That isn't true. Anybody have any thoughts before we keep going?
For me, what comes up, it's Deidre. is like just looking at a lot of things with spirit lately. It's a process, as we all know, you know, trying to look at what's coming up, and every time it always comes back to just accepting whatever's coming in the moment exactly the way that it is, and not trying to change it, not wishing it was different. You know, just allowing it to just be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So if it looks like a crappy picture, allowing the crappy picture and not, you know, judging yourself for what looks like a crappy picture being there, you know, like, just this really silly example. I got up this morning and I was going to the kitchen to get my morning cup of hot cocoa because I really like hot chocolate. And I boiled the kettle and I switched the switch off and I unplugged the kettle, and as I was moving the cup, I knocked it with my arm a little bit, so I spilled a whole bunch of hot chocolate on the floor. And I caught myself just, you know, in that moment, you know, getting kind of huffy and irritated with myself that I spilled hot chocolate on the floor. And instead of, you know, beating myself up further for it, I just noticed where I was, and then noticing where I was allowed me to, you know, realize I didn't have to keep doing that, and I didn't let it wreck my day. But it's like little things like that that come along that just can be so altering. In the video for the program that I'm doing today, Lisa's 40-day program, she's talking about preparing for a wedding, and one of the things she said in the video, she was doing like catering or something, and funnily enough, there was like this tray of little salad dressing cups, and I guess someone knocked over the whole tray. And one of the things that she said is just the realization that everything is just happening, and everything is neutral. Everything is just happening as it is. And instead of, you know, getting all bent out of shape that there was salad dressing, you know, spilled, it ended up that, yeah, they didn't have full silver, you know, containers full of salad dressing, but they ended up with enough salad dressing that everybody at the wedding had enough. And you know, it's that kind of allowing that just allows miracles to happen instead of getting caught up on how things go and whatever. So I just thought that was really helpful. Everything is just happening.
I love that.
Yeah.
Gigi, thank you. That was such a relevant and spot on and like easy to understand example. I love that teaching, the idea that everything is just happening. It's just blizzarding outside. It's just snowing. It's just winter. And it's so funny how we I'm using now the example of weather, you know, whatever it is, whether it's too hot, too cold, you know, it can be something that we can complain that it should be something different when, in fact, everything is just happening and just allowing it to be what it is. And this is also where I feel like there's such a nice intersection between the course and mindfulness. With the practice of mindfulness, it is about just accepting that things are the way they are, and they don't have to, without putting, you know, my desire for it to be something different, without, you know, trying to make the pleasant things stay forever and make the unpleasant things go away. It's just allowing. So I love that. Everything is just happening.
Yeah.
It's just happening. That's great.
that can be challenging to remember. You know, especially when we get caught up in the emotions
mm-hmm.
around what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But,
right.
And that's where it's beneficial to just process through it in whatever way, you know, whatever
right.
way that releases those emotions, and not
right.
judge yourself for the fit. I had a fit yesterday, an absolute fit.
Ugh.
And by the time I just let it happen, I just let it rip, and I didn't try to change it or control it in any way. And it was just here by myself. I had my fit. I felt so much better
mm-hmm.
when that was over. It was such a great release. I can't even tell you.
Yeah,
and it meant
yeah.
nothing. It meant
yeah.
absolutely nothing. But
yeah.
had I tried to, and what I really saw is how I have been, this certain scenario has bothered me for a while, and I've been pushing it back, you know, just trying to ignore it, just pour pink paint over it, anything, just
mm-hmm.
not face it. And until I let it be exactly what it was, a whole lot of nothing, I couldn't see it that way.
I love that, a whole lot of nothing. That's where you let yourself be where you were at. You let yourself feel
Absolutely.
Your feelings. As we've said before, this is not a course. It was Maria Felipe who said this is not a course in suppressing your feelings. It's letting yourself be exactly where you're at, and then, you know, if you need to go through it and have that fit and, you know, have a temper tantrum, whatever, all that matters is that at some point we're ready to turn to the Holy Spirit. We have to be where we're at. However, like I love how you said, process it in whatever way works, and not judging yourself for it.
Not
letting
judging
yourself be exactly where you are.
You want,
yep.
you know, I love to paint, and a lot of times I just don't allow it. You know, there's too many other things going on. After having that fit, I swear to you, I was so productive creatively, I could not even believe it. It was a great release. So that's enough of that. But.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but you know, it's all interrelated. I'm thinking through this exercise, and I keep coming back to the holy instant, right? When you get that holy instant that we often do, that we talk about at the beginning, Corinne, when you often mention that, the holy instant to me is it's like a mental exercise. When you encounter all those negative things, that split second when you make a decision of how you're going to think, I mean, it's not even a conscious decision. That's, to me, that's where it all is. And it's like pushing the button in that old John Mark Stroud's radio. You know, you're going to push the button
uh-huh.
for ego, or you're going to push the button
uh-huh.
for Holy Spirit. But that's it to me. That's why I'm here. I'm trying to build strength, like, you know, get strong so that internally you don't make the wrong decision. You make the right decision. You know, you go the right way.
And that strength comes through you. That strength comes from Spirit. The strength comes from the Holy Spirit. So it's our ability. Speaking of John Mark Stroud, he, in that same lesson where he talks about, you know, if you're going to be listening to the Holy Spirit's channel or if you're listening to the ego's channel, as if you were listening to a radio, he says clearly, you know, because a lot of people will say, I can't hear the Holy Spirit, you know, what's my problem? He says we don't have a listening problem. We listen to the ego quite well. We've mastered that voice. We have a choosing problem. We think that the ego is going to make us happy. We think that there's something there. So it's a problem in choosing, not a problem in listening. So it's I don't know if exactly this is what you're saying, but this is just putting it into my own words, that your I hear your willingness to be a better and better listener. That's how I feel, at least for myself, that willingness to be that better and better listener, because that's where the certainty and the strength comes from, is that clarity of being able to listen to the voice of our sane mind.
The sane part.
Yep.
Not the other one.
Not the other one.
No names.
Deidre, were you going to add something before?
I was just going to add to the discussion that Paulo brought up about having the fit, is that sometimes the greatest learning can happen by allowing those fits. You know, it doesn't feel very pleasant at the time, but sometimes we think that we have to, like, spiritualize everything and, you know, like, not let ourselves go to that place of having the fit.
Right.
And I created an experience like that over the holiday, and I really realized, like, the value. Like it didn't feel good at the time, and I did go to the place of making myself feel bad about it. But you know, after reflection and looking at it with spirit, I really understand that allowing myself to go to that place brought me to a place of going within and really looking at some things and questioning the beliefs I held about them, and, you know, looking at the symbols of the world and saying, okay, well, what I believed about, you know, this about the holiday isn't necessarily true, and I can choose to make myself miserable and unhappy about the particular, you know, event that seemed to unfold, or I can, you know, take what I can from it and be willing to see it differently. And once I was in that place where I was willing to process it differently, I really saw a lot of value in the whole picture of the experience. So.
Beautiful.
That's excellent.
That is.
That is. Can you talk to everybody?
Oh, hi.
Is that Alicia?
Yes, how y'all doing?
Hi. Hello, how are you?
I am great, even better now, because all of you all touched on exactly what I needed to hear tonight. Oh, my God. I'm just sitting here listening like, God, I'm so glad I called in, because, and Deidre, what you've been saying, I needed that reminder, like, oh, you know, it's just happening. And it brought me back to a situation, you know, earlier had today. I was hanging out with, you know, my boyfriend, and I noticed that he seemed a little bit withdrawn. So I'm like, hey, are you okay? Or are you okay? Like an hour later, are you okay? Are you okay? And then I start bothering him, talk to me, what's going on, and it turns out he was a little bit frustrated with me about some things, and I ended up swinging, like, all over. I mean, I said what I had to say. I kind of ended up swinging onto his end, like, and because I was so dependent on trying to get him to talk, trying to make us okay because I couldn't deal with him essentially withdrawing from me. And then on the back end, I left his house secretly frustrated. Like, he didn't know. I was just like, oh, I gotta, you know, gotta go now. Gotta, you know, get up early in the morning. Bye. And I'd, like, smile and kiss them. But, like, literally I'm feeling stupid on the inside. You know? And I, as you were saying, like, once you were speaking, I thought, you know what? What would have happened if I would have just let him be in whatever mood he was in? You know, and let myself feel the discomfort of the distance, because and then on top of that, it's like I left feeling not only mad with him, then I'm mad with myself for, like, I should have asserted my boundaries, or, you know, I should have said this, I should have said that, you know, and then I'm mad with myself for being frustrated, and I'm like, oh, you're not being very spiritual, you're such a failure at this, like, and then I'm pissed with God, like, you know, F this good person crap, I'm sick of it, like, yes. All of this was just happening internally as I was driving home. So, you know, all of what you all shared is just confirming for me, like, okay, breathe. And I just, it's what you all been sharing. It's just a reminder for me to just not judge myself so heavily. And at the same time, just let whatever is being. And I'm kind of eager to go into, you know, seeing him again and just letting it be. But, whew, y'all really just touched on some chords, and I was like, yeah. So thank you for everyone who shared on that topic.
You know, what you were just saying, this is for me, can be the most elusive thing to hang on to here. But we think our happiness depends on something outside of us. If that person just behaved this way, if that, you know, that's the underlining problem. And, you know, when I'm aware of it, I do so much better.
Right.
You know, and in those situations, when I'm aware that I'm actually allowing somebody else to, allowing my happiness to depend on something out there, if I'm aware of that and I call on the Holy Spirit, oh, my God, the situation will shift right before my eyes. But it's a subtle kind of remembering and forgetting. And that's where I find, you know, I really then have to go through this process of with my emotional well-being. I don't know how else to put it.
I know what you mean.
But the Holy Spirit is the answer in every situation. If we can just be willing and remember to call on that divine help within us.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. Beautiful. Thank you, Alicia, for sharing. I love how it happens often on, you know, this call where we're all talking about and learning the same thing. Oh, beautiful. Let's read another paragraph. I think I'm on the sentence. I really need to get better. I always do this. I don't mark where we stopped reading, and then we keep talking. And I think it's the sentence that starts, it is in the special relationship, right? That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
Looks
I read
good.
It yet. Okay.
That's where you're at.
Good. It is in the special relationship, born of the hidden wish for special love from God, that the ego's hatred triumphs. For the special relationship is the renunciation of the love of God and the attempt to secure for the self the specialness which he denied. It is essential to the preservation of the ego that you believe this specialness is not hell, but heaven. For the ego would never have you see that separation can only be loss, being the one condition in which heaven cannot be. Wow, that's a packed short little paragraph. Again, in reflecting this idea that this dream of a world is the opposite of heaven, being the one condition which heaven cannot be, is this condition of separation and this condition of only loss, because there is no loss in truth. There is no loss in reality. I thought this is just really powerful, too, how it's clearly saying that in the special relationship, which comes out of the hidden wish of our having asked God for specialness, and it was something that God, you know, couldn't give because we're all equally special, that we renunciated the love of God and tried to find that specialness instead in a way that we decided to try to make for ourselves in these relationships with, again, not just people, but any relationship here, relationship to our own body, relationship to food, whatever that relationship is. We've made it as a substitute for the love of God. So that's really powerful. How about we go for another paragraph? To everyone, heaven is completion. There can be no disagreement on this because both the ego and the Holy Spirit accept it. They are, however, in complete disagreement on what completion is and how it is accomplished. The Holy Spirit knows that completion lies first in union and then in the extension of union. To the ego, completion lies in triumph and in the extension of the victory, even to the final triumph over God. In this, it sees the ultimate freedom of the self, for nothing would remain to interfere with it. This is its idea of heaven. From this, it follows that union, which is a condition in which the ego cannot interfere, must be hell. So that's the ego's interpretation of union, of truth of heaven, that it must be hell because it's a condition that, you know, the ego can't actually touch. What stands out to me, my eyes rested on the sentence where it says, in this it sees the ultimate freedom of the self, for nothing would remain to interfere with it. When the Course talks about, you know, this idea of, you know, the ego wants to kill you, meaning the capital Y, you, the ego wants to kill God, that's what this is saying, is that it's seeking freedom of itself, its ultimate own independence away from truth, and yet it is love that's beneath, it's love that's actually, that we're drawing from and keeping this idea of an ego alive. So that's why the ego often doesn't want us to question anything. You know, it'll say, don't look within, you know, there's nothing to be found there. It's scary to go within, things like that, other that the Course references in other places. That was just something that came up for me, that even though it seeks to have ultimate freedom of the small self, even that idea of a small self is being believed with God energy. We're misusing this God energy that we are. So in other words, we can't be separate from God. It's impossible. We can only think that we can be. Anything standing out to anybody in this paragraph? So the Holy Spirit knows that completion lies first in union and then in the extension of union. So the Holy Spirit knows that our completion lies in love and the extension of love. The ego, it's to the ego, completion is separation. It's about finding happiness outside of oneself, like we referenced before.
The world really, really does. This whole special relationship thing is so permeated in the world. It's really challenging sometimes. That's one of the reasons why I got caught up in this little fit that I had, because I'm here alone and I'm feeling fine about that. And mm-hmm. then I have a conversation with somebody who's saying, oh, my husband fixed me breakfast this morning, and he's digging out the driveway, and all. And then I get off the phone, and it's like feeling this tremendous loss because mm-hmm. I'm not in a special relationship, you know. And it just set off something in me, you know. I'm not trying to hide from this anymore. You know, so if I allow myself to just go through whatever it is and, turn to the Holy Spirit, I always come back to balance. I always come back to balance. We can't lose.
Yeah, we can't. And letting bubble up, you know, whatever is in there that needs to come out, again, you're letting it come out to the light. You're not, like, I love how you said that, Paula, that you're not trying to hide it anymore. You're not trying to hide from it, or whatever your exact word was. That's what we all need to do, is not hide anything from Holy Spirit.
But the special relationship is a real, it's drummed into us.
It's really
drummed into us, and how we need it,
mm-hmm.
and how we're not complete without it.
Absolutely. We just read that the special relationship is the ego's chief weapon for keeping you from heaven. So
it truly is.
It's like you said, it's permeated. It's everywhere. It is everywhere, that belief. And so where the Course says, I'm sorry?
In the middle of feeling this terrible void, you know, for this separation from what was, from my husband, you know, it was almost kind of laughable to me, you know, because their presence is so strong in me anymore that I can't really, I don't believe it anymore. They are so with us, everyone that has ever left this body, passed through this nonsense that we call Earth plane. They have gone nowhere.
I so appreciate you sharing that, Paula, and you just reminded me, one of my best friends lost her fiance, and when I went down to visit her, she's a friend down in the Keys, in the Florida Keys where I used to live, this is years ago now, was saying that there are times when she was in her garden, when she felt him so strongly that she could not muster up a tear if she tried, that there was just such a literal sense that he didn't go anywhere, that he still is, you know, that love is real beyond, you know, anything that we can possibly comprehend in this world, that she could not muster up a tear, you know, if she tried. And so thank you for reminding me of that, and thank you for what you shared, because it's just a beautiful reminder for all of us.
You just said she was in the garden. I had a very dear friend pass, and she was an artist also, and she used to do these collages with ladybugs. There were always ladybugs in her collages. And when she passed, I was in my garden, and thinking about her, you know, she came into my mind, and this idea that she was as close as my thoughts about her hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I look, and there's a ladybug crawling up my arm.
Ooh.
It was so wonderful. Her presence was so right there. tell you.
That's awesome.
There is no death. Forget it.
I so relate to what you're saying, to the extent that, you know, we're bombarded by media and things when, especially if someone in the world of form is a celebrity who's transitioned, and anytime I come across that, you know, and or even just friends telling me, oh, so-and-so has left the body, I just, with the experiences that I've had and what I know working with the angels and as a medium, I just can't be sad. It's impossible for me to be sad.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes that it's challenging because the world expects, you know, you to act a certain way, or, you know, if you're not sad, that you don't care, and that's not it at all. It's just that I know that the energy hasn't gone anywhere, and so I can't, like, I talk to my dad every day, pretty much, in my mind. So I just wanted to share that I really resonate with what you're saying, and I've felt it so strongly, you know, recently with the passing of David Bowie, and I just, you know, I'm witnessing my friends, you know, getting so sad about Alan Rickman, and I'm like, I just can't, like, because I have this sense of these energies just being like, whee, and like, woohoo! I can't be sad.
Yeah, wow. You just reminded me, my sister had a dream before Michael Jackson died. She had a dream that he died, and he was just done being Michael Jackson. Like, he was just done.
He was just ready to put the body down.
Yeah.
It's like with Robin Williams, he was just ready to, he's just done. That's it. No sadness.
Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I just, something strange just happened to my line, and I had to press star to join the call again. I don't know what that was about, but that was all I wanted to just share, is that, you know, like, how is that explainable, having a dream that happens and that it was okay, and then, you know, he actually passes. He was just finished being Michael Jackson, that's all. So we have a couple minutes left. We'll end there in terms of reading. Does anybody feel moved to share before we wrap up for the night?
Only a quote that the conversation reminded me of. Dean Slider, he wrote a few books, and one of them is Natural Meditation. And from time to time, he comes over here from the West Coast to teach meditation class, and I'm in on that from time to time. So he has this quote that death is like taking off shoes that are too tight.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so beautiful.
Peace Pilgrim called it the clay garment, I think she said. And I just always like that, like, just, you know, like shedding old clothes.
Wow.
That's awesome. Beautiful. Wow. Thank you, everybody, so much for a wonderful, wonderful joining, a wonderful call. I love you all. Have a great week.
Same.
You
have a good week.
Take care, guys.
Thank you.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sweet family.
Good night.